Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
All right, rolling along. Greeny with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. The assembled members of the hashtag crew have indeed assembled, including Pineapple Jack, who is here at the desk with us, because I wanted him to hear this. So we've been pretty serious today, right? We've had some pretty serious football conversations about the quarterback situation in Chicago, about whether players will start pulling in Eli, Deion Sanders, who's going to be the starter in Pittsburgh, all this stuff. And then we got into all the Shohei Ohtani stuff, which is overwhelmingly the most important thing that's going on in sports, but it's not fun. It's not light. So I want to share with you something that happened this morning here on ESPN Radio. So the show that starts our day is called Unsportsmanlike, and it stars Evan and Chris Canty and Michelle Smallman. And they did a draft this morning. They like to do these drafts. And the draft they did this morning, from what I'm told, is they picked who they would want to go to opening day with. Baseball's opening day, which is now like six different days. Who would you like most like to go to?
With a scandal in between. Yes,
who would you most like? That's right. You have opening day on the other side of the globe. Then you have a massive gambling scandal. Then we play in Arizona.
Back in spring training.
At night. Then you've got a game. Then the parade in Cincinnati. Anyway, the point of it is they were talking about drafting who they would most want to go to opening day with. And Chris Canty made what I think has to be the most controversial selection of its kind in the history of sports.
This person probably loves the game of baseball more than any non-baseball analyst that we have at this company, and that is our very own Hembo, Paul Hembokidis.
Oh, God.
Oh,
God.
He
Great
is a
pick.
Huge,
oh, terrible pick.
Huge baseball fan, a Phillies fan. Listen, I know that he's going to give me some facts and information that I didn't ask for, but he is going to be passionate about watching the game of baseball. And here's the thing, I know I'm going to get educated along with the experience of watching the game. So Hembo would be my first pick off the board to watch a baseball game.
I would leave it there after the top of the first.
Wow.
Oh, God.
It would be so like Hembo?
I love Hembo. That's
exactly
why I'm saying that. I would not want to go with CC's because Hembo's in there. So I couldn't do that.
Wow.
That would be rough.
Wow.
I don't need to be told how wide I am by Hembo, which is his new move.
All right. So let us dive into this. Yeah. Chris Canty, who's had some fascinating takes, some I've agreed with and some I've disagreed with over the course of the years that I've known him, has now authored maybe his most controversial take, that if everyone at ESPN, his first choice to attend opening day with is you, Hembo. How do you feel?
I agree with Evan. I would be a terrible choice.
Why would you be a terrible
choice? Because
what do you do at baseball games? You know what? What's fascinating? Hembo and I, we've known each other for a million years. We work together all these years. We write books. We've never gone to a baseball game together.
We've not.
I mean, that's not that surprising.
Well, I mean, I go to baseball games. You go to baseball games. Hembo on his vacation goes to minor league baseball
games. That's right.
Exactly. That's why
barnstorming
it's not that surprising.
Tours.
The Jack L's.
What do you do at when you go to a baseball game? What do you do?
I can't watch the game like a fan. I can't.
Do you keep score?
I don't keep score, like old style, old style like that, but okay. I do bring a stopwatch.
And what does that mean?
And okay. I pretend I'm in the dugout. Bubba, I'm not kidding. I bring a stopwatch to every game.
See, this, I mean, come on, Canty.
What are you timing?
I'm timing a few things. I'm timing pitcher to the catcher in terms of time, of course, and I'm timing catcher pop times because I'm trying to figure out what the timing is going to be for a potential steal at second base. And so on literally every time a ball is pitched and that pitcher is in the stretch, I go bop, bop. And then any time the catcher is going to throw down to second base in between innings, it's bop, bop on the stopwatch. I do the math. And then based upon that, I decide on every single pitch whether or not this guy should be stealing second base. And I watch the game like that for nine innings.
Good luck, Canty. Have fun.
Yeah, nice that pick, sounds loser. Like a what a day that sounds like. I used to go and we would do what we called beer an inning. And so that was what I did in college is we would go to Wrigley Field, the Wrigley Field bleachers. And now people may not know this. I got to college in Chicago in 1985. I went to school in Evanston, which is a suburb of Chicago. Wrigley Field did not have lights until 1988. So every game was played in the daytime. So a very popular thing to do. If you ever, I don't know if this is still the case, but in those days, many Northwestern students did not have classes on Thursdays. That was the big day to not have a class. I would say every Thursday afternoon game, the Wrigley Field bleachers would be filled with Northwestern students.
And we would do beer in innings. So you would just, that was our game. We're going to have a beer every single inning. Then one game I remember like it was yesterday, we decided we were going to do a beer a run. Every time a run was scored, we were going to try and drink a beer. And I remember that the game was like 8-3 after two innings. And I don't remember anything else about the day. I don't remember who I don't remember who they played. I don't remember who won. I'm not sure I ever knew. I'm not sure it ever made any difference. But that is vastly different than timing the pop time on every single pitch from the pitcher to the catcher. Now, Pineapple Jack, you are sort of Hembo's protege. He has almost adopted you. I mean, I assume you have parents. But at this point, I feel like Hembo is as close to you as those people are. How do you feel about this realization that the act of going to a baseball game with Hembo would include that?
Well, I'm a little apprehensive now. Hembo would have been my choice, too, but now...
Why?
I'm pretending I'm the first base coach.
You're a former player.
True.
You know, he probably goes in full uniform.
Stand by. Let's analyze the phrase former player for just a brief moment here, okay?
Well, tread up the numbers. Tread lightly.
Look up the numbers. Okay. He can play.
He's not Steve Sachs.
He can swing it.
He played college ball, Division II or III. Division II, college ball. I'm not suggesting that is nothing, but like I don't think that when he's hanging out with Cal Ripken, it's like a couple of former baseball players. Like I remember introducing him to Cal Ripken, and it was the best day of Hembo's life by far. And this is a man who has gotten married and had seen his wife have children.
That's right.
And he would still put the day he met Cal at number one on his list. And when I introduced him, he wasn't like, yeah, well, you know, you played, I played. So we're just, you know, we work at ESPN, Jack, right? So like... If you cannot compare yourself, you can't say I'm a former player like to Tim Legler because you were like a baller. You know what I mean? Like I used to go to Rucker Park, man, and I would get buckets. I'm a walking bucket. He's freaking Tim Legler. He won the 3-point contest. Okay? So Hembo, we cannot refer to Hembo as a former player.
It's like saying you and Jack are both sports broadcasters.
That's exactly. Yeah. No. He's much closer to me than you are to Cal Ripken.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
That's not true.
It is, because he has a chance to someday be me.
I on-based 450 in a four-year college career. I
got
spin a double play better than any player in Northwest Ohio.
I've got Hembo's Cedarville stats here, because the TV crew for the morning show posted them as a full screen on the show.
No.
Okay.
Hembo is the career walks record leader at Cedarville. He's number two in career assists, tied for fourth in career sack bunts, seventh in games played, started, and career chances. I don't know what that means. Is that just
how many chances you got? Like, were you a shortstop or second baseman?
A second baseman.
Okay.
Oh, okay. And
so how many times the ball was hit to him?
Gotcha.
Second base?
And eighth in runs scored, a 3-time NCCAA Midwest Regional champion, and he had 3 appearances in the NCCAA National Tournament. Of course, he's a former player.
Can I just ask one question?
Yeah.
What is the NCCAA?
Are you ready?
You're saying a bunch of letters.
Can
I don't
you guess?
Recognize.
There's
an
extra C in there somewhere.
I bet you can guess. What do I believe?
The
Christian.
It's a national.
I was a good Christian ball
college.
Player.
You're a National Christian College Athletic Association.
That's right.
So Cedarville is a religious university.
Yes. I mean, don't compare me to any secular second baseman, but okay. As far as Christians are concerned, I was phenomenal.
Did you ever play against, like, yeshiva?
No, like, we
was it just one religion? Or, like, would you play against any and all religions?
No,
schools?
I memorized the New Testament, too.
Okay, you got that, but you didn't have to play against them.
No, we didn't.
Okay, fair. I'm just trying to figure out what the level of competition was here. Because once you throw in the Jews, all of a sudden the quality of play is going to be much higher.
Hey, Christian Yelich is pretty good.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Christian Braun.
Christian Braun.
The most ironically named person in the history of baseball.
No kidding.
So anyway, okay. So I don't know where this leaves us.
I mean, it's just a terrible pick is where it leaves us.
It's a terrible pick.
I mean, I'm literally on this week, I mean, hopefully tomorrow unless it rains out, I'm literally going to my 17th opening day, going to the Mets, going to City Field. I'm Mr. Opening Day. Mm. And I went on the show with them to end the show on Sportsnet, and I'm telling Kenny, look, Hembo's not even a real human. He can't even cross his fingers like an old person. He's going to sit there. He's going to have, you know, Diet Coke and, you know, Cracker Jacks. I didn't even know about this stopwatch thing. But look, we can tailgate. We can drink. We can have fun. We can talk about it. You can't even ask me a question about movies or music. He's just going to sit there and you're going to ask him a question. He's going to say, well, that was a cool double play. And you'll say, hey, did you see that movie last night?
Did you see that pop time by
and
the
he'll
catcher?
Say, yeah, I don't know. The catcher's moving a little slow. I'm going to be a fun person to be there with, and it's very disappointing, that Hembo was his first pick, but I was not even on there. I'm Mr. Opening Day.
Jeff Passan wasn't even picked.
Yeah, where is Passan? Disappointing list.
Bubba, who are you going to opening day with?
I go with my friends from Fordham.
Okay. A bunch of Met fans. Yep. Okay, I like that.
And who's your first pick? Who would be your first
pick? Who from ESPN? Because this draft is like who the ESPN on-air personality is that you would choose. So who would you go with? It's a good question. Who would I go with?
I mean, I do like Michelle's third pick of Chris Russo. I think that might be my number one pick.
Who went ahead of him?
Yeah, she had Kirchen and Joe Buck. You know, she obviously goes with...
She's from St. Louis,
yeah,
right?
So the St. Louis Joe Buck. There. And, you know, I can't go wrong with Kirchen.
That's a great list.
I wouldn't be upset with that.
She has the best draft.
Yeah, she had the best one. But Russo, I mean, going to a game with Russo, I'm sitting at Citi Field with Russo, I'm all in for that. Canty had Hembo, Buster, and Michael Kay. And Evan had Legler, Kimberly Martin, Victoria Arlen.
No passing.
What? Evan had who? I'm sorry?
Tim Legler, Kimberly Martin, Victoria Arlen.
I need the explanation for that. Yeah, like, I don't understand. Why would he pick Kim Martin? I mean, she's one of our favorite people.
Evan always just goes with random people women? Like you just saw. I don't know.
Just pick random.
I think it's a very strange thing.
I think because Kmart was here today, and then he also just interviewed.
So she was
Victoria
just top of mind.
Yeah, I don't know his picks.
She used to cover.
Legler
the
was
Mets
in studio today, literally. So I think he picked Legler. Evan doesn't make any
just
sense.
Just kissing up to
it was
Legler.
Literally, just people he had just seen.
Yeah, Michelle clearly dominated this list. That's a great
she
list.
She did. Yeah,
Kirsten,
Michelle has
Buck
the best.
And Russo.
That's the best foursome for sure.
Are you going to any opening day? Like, you're going to go to the Phillies opening day?
I'm not
going to
go. I'm going to watch baseball for 12 hours tomorrow. Boring weather, of course. Who do you think that you would choose of all of ESPN people? And also, like, I don't think it has to be – I don't think it has to be, like, a baseball person.
No, I
like,
agree.
It's the company you're keeping, and that's why you would never choose to go with me.
Yeah.
I would never choose to go with me.
That's right.
You'd have some great heckles, though.
I would hey, Real Muto, nice 2-4 pop
I think
time.
I'm in the dugout still. Like, I'm that guy.
I'm more impressed with your numbers than I expected I was going
He's
to be.
He's the career walks record leader at Cedarville.
Well, now that, what that generally means is he had no pop, right? Like, if there,
big
you,
time,
no you're pop. Just taking pitches. How many home runs did you hit?
Zero.
And zero home
fourth
runs.
In career sack bunts. So,
oh, yeah.
He's a small ball player.
You didn't get a hold of one time?
Not one time.
Oh, man.
But I three appearances in the NCCAA National Tournament.
I was
tournament.
A phenomenal Christian second baseman. God is good.
Okay, I like it.
There
I
was mean, one tournament we played in. There was one tournament we played in that I got thrown out for swearing.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Really?
The umpire threw me out of the complex for swearing. It was it was a super Christian
You're the program's
tournament.
All-time wow. record.
What yeah. do you, I mean, without saying, do you remember, did you say like a really bad swear? Or could it have been?
Was I didn't take the Lord's name in vain. I didn't say that. No. It was something else.
That would be an expulsion.
I like the idea
that
of like.
That would be like your Pete Rose now. Yeah. Like a lifetime ban.
You know, like David Ortiz and other players, so many players, after they hit a home run, they touch home plate, they like pound their chest, point up to the sky.
Yeah.
Hembo did that after like a sack bunt. Like,
yeah.
Thanks, big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for letting me lay that one down the first baseline.
For that first to third.
You were pretty good at that at the sack bunt. I can see you being a good sack bunt.
I can lay
the
it down.
For it. Yeah. Anyway, all right. So
and
I
the
think
temperament.
I think we've learned something here. I actually have not. I'd like to think about this. Who would I want to go to a baseball game with? Like
three. It's 3 hours. It's a long time.
Well, so the beauty lately it isn't 3 hours.
It's 2:40 now.
But opening day will be 3 hours. The beauty of baseball are all the things that happen in between the action. So it is someone you want to talk to. That's actually an interesting thought. You would want to go, so of the three sports, let's use hockey too. Of the four major team sports, would you choose to go with different people to all of those games? Like, I would. Like, the person I would want to go to a baseball game with is not necessarily the person I'd want to go to a basketball
That's
game
true.
With slash football mm-hmm. game. Hockey is the one sport where I would really like to go with a hockey analyst, like a former hockey player, because there's so much in the strategy and stuff that they could explain to me that I wouldn't otherwise perhaps notice or see. The football players do that too. I'm telling you, you watch a football game just on TV. With any of our former players, especially the quarterbacks or the coaches, they're seeing stuff you don't see regularly. I'll tell you a quick story about that in a minute. Let me take a break. We're back with much more on ESPN Radio.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Greeny, the podcast.
All right, Greeny with you on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. I love this song. Is there a reason for Cheap Trick today, or you just like the song?
No, I like Cheap Trick. I've just been listening to some of their music recently.
No, I just thought sometimes we do it because it's an anniversary or something.
Not today. Just enjoying some Cheap Trick.
I love Cheap Trick. All right, quick 30 seconds for ESPN Bet here. We remind you, ESPN Bet is live. As the official sports book of ESPN, ESPN Bet's the only place to find daily exclusives and offers with your favorite ESPN personalities and shows. Sign up today. New users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Find all your favorite markets and bets like in-game wagering, cross-sport parlays, teasers, and all the props you can handle. That's ESPN Bet. Download today. What a play. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. I want to tell a quick story just on the subject we were just talking about, how Hembo brings a stopwatch to baseball games, which is embarrassing. In every way. I mean, you should be embarrassed. Your children should be embarrassed. And everyone who knows you should be embarrassed. Frankly, I'm embarrassed that you're a member of the hashtag crew for that. I used to have to keep score at games, when I covered games, which is covering a baseball game is a very different experience from going to a baseball game for fun. And then, of course, there is being a manager. So I love telling this story. So Buck Showalter used to work at ESPN. I think this was before he went to Baltimore. I think it was between Arizona and Baltimore, but it might have been between Baltimore and the Mets. I don't remember exactly what year this was, but we filmed a commercial, one of the old SportsCenter commercial type things. And Buck is there and I'm there and there's a bunch of other people. And he and I are just sitting and those are days where you just sit around and wait and do nothing a lot. So I just started asking him a bunch of questions. I said, okay, Buck, take me through all the decisions you're making as the manager of a baseball game, right? You're the manager. Take me through, start right at the top. Take me through all the decisions you make. And he rattled off a list that was probably at least 90 seconds long. Where's my right fielder shading? How do I have my shortstop in the right spot? Where's this guy? Where's that? What are we doing here? What does this hitter do? What's the wind doing? And it goes on and on and on and on and on. And then he said, and then it's the second pitch. And I thought to myself, that's just so awesome. Like, a baseball game is going on, and most of us, Hembo notwithstanding, are paying so little attention to all the things that are going on. But the manager has so many things in his head. I think it is possible that there are actually more things going on at any given time in a baseball game than there are in the other sports where we automatically assume there's a lot more going on because the action is nonstop. But with a baseball game, because every pitch is literally different, every pitch is a different experience than the previous one, and multiple decisions have to be made on each one of them, the chess element of baseball may actually be the best chess element we have of any sport. The problem is, it's the least interesting to watch because less things happen more often. Like, the chess element of football is fascinating to watch because it comes fast and it's violent and it's quick. And at the end of the day, sometimes, no matter how well you play chess against the other guy, if that guy just knocks you directly on your behind, it didn't really make a whole lot of difference, you know, that you went pawn to queen four and it was the right move. In baseball, that doesn't ever happen. So the strategy element of baseball, which is something that I think young fans are probably less attracted to than they used to be, is actually the best thing about the sport.
And that's why I think the more you learn about baseball, I'm speaking for myself, of course, the more you learn about baseball, the more you love about baseball. The little things in football, for example, it's really easy to see Tyreek Hill go in motion and then catch a touchdown pass. Like, anything that happens pre-snap is always obvious. The camera's focused on the line of scrimmage. You can see almost everybody. But when I go to a baseball game, as I'm sure you're not surprised to hear me say, I notice all the little things when the shortstop moves two steps to his right because he knows an off-speed pitch is coming, or the right fielder moves two steps in because he knows that there's going to be a play to make it third base if a runner's going to go first to third on a pitch because he thinks the batter's going to hit the ball the other way. And there are so many variables and so few constants on every single play, and you got 300 opportunities in every single game. And that's why, you know, the attention to detail is so important. But if you're a fan of the game, you can enjoy it if you know nothing about it. And that's what makes it beautiful.
Right. But the problem is that for too long, people were trying to make people excited about what you just said. And most people just aren't.
That's right.
That's just not the exciting part. So I think most people, I think if you asked them, see, I think going to a baseball game, and maybe this is just a function of my age, is actually my favorite sport to attend. Mm. Like, I would rather go. Now, I've gone to far fewer hockey games than I have others, and I will say going to a hockey game is sensational. Yeah. At Pineapple Jack, you're the big hockey guy in this group. Going to a hockey game is, in fact, when I covered the only time I ever really covered hockey in a significant way, there was one year I worked for Chicagoland TV, CLTV in Chicago, which was the 24-hour local cable news channel in Chicago. And the Blackhawks made a playoff run. They played Vancouver in the first round, and then they played the Red Wings in the second round. This would have been 95. They swept Vancouver in an incredibly good series. Like, it was a four-game sweep, but I think every game was decided by one goal. And then they played Detroit, and I think they lost in five. But I think every game may have gone to overtime, some of them multiple overtimes. And I'm covering these games, and it was the most exciting sporting events I'd ever been to in my entire life. Like, if you become emotionally attached to what's going on in a hockey playoff game, nothing is more exciting than that, because it's the exact opposite of a baseball game. Yeah. It's literally the exact opposite. There's never a moment where something isn't going on. And anyway, I don't know exactly what point I'm trying to make there, but it just seemed like a fun conversation. So to spin it all the way back again, I think if I could go to a baseball game with anyone at ESPN, I think I would take Mad Dog, just because I would just take the most entertaining people. Like, I went to a lot of basketball games with Stephen A. Smith, Michael Wilbon, and Jalen Rose, and we sat there and watched all these games together. And a basketball game is really not a place you can have a lot of conversation. Like, there's just something is going on all the time. You need a conversationalist at a baseball game. You need someone who's going to talk, who at some time is going to talk about completely other things. And thus the reason that Hembo is the last person
oh, yeah.
I would want to go with. And that's the end of my dissertation. Thank you for attending my TED Talk.
No rebuttal.
Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Commercial Insurance can protect your small business with over 30 coverage options, an easy-to-use mobile app, personalized discounts, and more. Get a quote in as little as 6 minutes at progressivecommercial.com. Discounts and coverage selections not available in all states or situations. So the reason that Hembo had an NCAA tournament-based trivia question in our first hour was because we were going to get into a topic about John Calipari. And we wound up getting sidetracked because there was that news about the NCAA trying to get player props banned from college games. So we got sidetracked by that. So let's go, because that's an important and maybe more interesting topic. But let's go back to this. John Calipari will be returning to Kentucky for his 16th season as their men's basketball coach. The AD tweeted, "As we normally do at the end of every season, Coach Cal and I have had conversations about the direction of our men's basketball program, and I can confirm that he will return for his 16th season as a head coach." And one of the questions that has been placed on my screen, and I want to make it clear, this is not my question because I don't feel this way, but Cam, it is an interesting one that I'm sure you're not the only one who feels this way. Which coach is coasting, off a title from long ago the most? And Calipari, you have right at the top of your list. Explain yourself, Cam.
I just think there's a lot of these guys who are still having the high-level success, and obviously for Calipari it's different because so much of his job is prepping players for the NBA, recruiting, which he still does at an extremely high level. But last 5 years, bad tournament results. Some of the other guys on the list are NFL guys. Mike McCarthy, Sean Payton haven't won titles in 14, 15 years or so, and we still think of them as the, not McCarthy, but Payton as this really high-level coach. And I think a lot of players or coaches, if they win early in their career, obviously, it buys them so much more time, and we almost forget a little bit what's happened in the past couple of years. We pay more attention to, well, he's still that championship-level coach. I think Doc Rivers is a great example of that as well. 2008, he wins a championship. He's had four or five head coaching opportunities since then. Obviously, it's different for a guy who's been at the same place for so long, so I think Doc's maybe the better example. But there are guys who win early in their tenure at one place or another, and then kind of can turn that into a long time of a career. Mike Tomlin's another one that hasn't won at a high level in a long time and is still there in Pittsburgh. So it's an interesting question, and there's a lot of options for this answer. You might disagree with some of the ones on the list, but it is something that comes up with some of these guys often.
Well, so it really does bring us to an interesting place, which is, are championships the only real way to measure someone's success? Because, for example, you have Aaron Rodgers on the list. Now, at the risk of people accusing me just of being an Aaron Rodgers defender because I'm a Jet fan, if you're going to say Aaron Rodgers is coasting off a championship from a long time ago, since he last won a championship, he's won at least two MVPs and maybe more. He's led multiple teams.
He's won four, yeah.
What were some of them before he won his championship? That's what I don't know.
No, they were all been after. Yeah.
So he won the title, what, in 11?
10.
In 10? So in the 13 years that have happened since then, he's been the best player in the NFL four times. So it would be very hard for me to say he's been coasting off anything. He's been brilliant. The fact that his teams have not won championships do not suggest otherwise. Calipari's an interesting one because regular season success in college basketball is, it's just so much less important because making the tournament is just not that hard to do. Calipari has had unbelievable teams, and by any normal human standard, he's been ridiculously successful and has been from the day he got there, including this year. What was his record this year?
23-10.
So even that isn't even as good as I thought it was.
16-6 in the SEC.
But that's still, most people, you don't talk about them getting fired when they're 23-10.
They're a 3 seed.
He was a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. There's such a randomness, in my opinion, to the outcome of these championships. One of my favorite quotes ever, it was Billy Donovan. When Billy Donovan was the coach at Florida and they won back-to-back national championships. We were doing Mike and Mike back in those days. And I remember he came out like after they won it. And he said, the thing about the tournament is, if you started it all over again, just started from the beginning again, it would play out entirely differently. And that's true. And every once in a while, there's a team that is just so dominant and so good. Maybe his Florida teams would be included in that. I think this UConn team could be included in that. And there are others. But generally speaking, there's such a randomness, in my opinion, to who wins the quote-unquote national championship in college basketball, that I think consistent regular season success is actually a better way to judge how well a person is doing their job. Is that a stupid opinion for me to have?
No, it's not a stupid opinion. But at the same time, I'm not sure that opinion still shines a favorable light on John Calipari. Because I think over the course of a long period of time, postseason success should come if regular season success is there over that period of time. And over the last 4 years, Kentucky's won one postseason game. It's not like they've gotten to the Final Four and are approaching the precipice of winning a championship. He hasn't done that in almost 10 years. They haven't been to the Final Four since 2015. And the weird thing about Cal and the weird thing about Kentucky to me, Greeny, is that watching him coach and just watching his teams, it just looks outdated. He's stomping his feet. He's making it obvious it's his player's fault and not his own fault. He looks like the same guy that he was 10 years ago, where the world has just changed. And I think so much of of Big Blue Nation has come to resent that, not just because of the results, because I think they recognize the fact that the college basketball world is just different, and John Calipari is still reciting the same lines. Okay. Is that fair or unfair?
It is fair. Now we're getting into something that's a little more specific than just results.
Sure.
And that's fine. It's a better part. It makes the conversation better, not worse. I would just ask you this, and the name I'm about to mention is one of my favorite people in the sport and one of them for whom I have the most respect. So I want to make it clear. I ask the question without meaning to denigrate the person. But you know who's won exactly the same number of championships in college as John Calipari?
Who's that?
Tom Izzo. And all anyone ever talks about is what a genius, brilliant, magnificent coach he is, which he is. He won his only national championship in the year 2000. He's been there 24 years since then. He's had great success. He's had great tournament success, but he hasn't won a championship since then. I never hear anybody saying, well, Tom Izzo isn't doing enough. Now, is it because we think it should be easier to win at Kentucky than it is at Michigan State? I don't know. I don't know what the reason is, but it seems to me we're measuring them using very different criteria.
It's because of the players that they have.
I think Izzo almost gets the Tomlin treatment sometimes, where he's making more out of less, whereas Calipari has these great teams in the regular season, falls flat in the first round. Izzo, it's seen as more of an accomplishment that he even gets to like the second round of the Sweet 16 because his talent pool is a little less than Kentucky.
Well, is it fair to say, however, that Calipari has done it with one and dones almost exclusively all this time?
By choice.
So, I'm not saying no, but that's the talent pool.
Mm.
So if you're measuring his coaching, you're measuring how he's coaching 18-year-olds against the way almost everyone else is coaching 21-year-olds.
But there's also then the reflex to look at someone like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Devin Booker, who become NBA studs,
right,
who under Coach Cal were just okay. I mean, they weren't anywhere
because
close.
They were 18 years old.
But even they weren't close to being even the best players on their own team or the best freshman in America
under
Coach Cal.
But that speaks to how good their teams were, right? Devin Booker didn't even start on them. He's one of the seven best players in the world.
Or maybe it speaks to their player dev. I don't know. Go ahead, Jack.
If I may, he said in a press conference leading up to their game the other day about how that's the program and that's why guys want to come and play for him, because they can't just get the ball every possession at Kentucky. They have to share the ball, share their space. They can't be the superstar there. And then when they go to the league, they have those skills to play within a system and not be, you know, ball dominant like most number ones in college are.
Do you know what they used to say? They used to say the only person who could stop Michael Jordan was Dean Smith. Because he wasn't the prolific player in college and all that kind of stuff. Score. I mean, he was the national player of the year, but that was like the old joke they used to make about that. I remember one asking Bob Knight about that once, and that one didn't go well. But the point of it is that, like, I just think you're holding. I'm not accusing you of anything, Cam. I'm intrigued by the topic. My inclination is to respond by saying you're holding him to a very, very, very high standard.
And he should be.
Expecting but saying someone, it almost sounds to me like if you're saying coasting off of his one championship, it would make it seem like he hasn't done anything since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that maybe that's the wrong word. Maybe which championship from long ago has bought someone the most time or given them the most leeway, something like that. It's not like he just won a championship and stopped coaching and just kicked his feet up. He's still doing this at a high level. The results haven't been there, but maybe coasting is just the wrong word. But I think it's an interesting thing to think about with a lot of these guys that win early and then have some success, you know, throughout their career, but never really reach that mountaintop.
There's a reason he's getting paid $8.5 million a year and has that $33 million buyout. I mean, it's kind of, whether you want to say coasting or whatever it is, it's because of the past success, and they're expecting more of that success. Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Kentucky AD cares how these players are doing in the NBA. I mean, obviously it helps them get those players, but they're not paying Cal $8.5 million to not make the tournament or lose in the first round. They need more results. So, I mean, I get what Cam is saying, and, you know, I also be curious to know how similar the Izzo thing is to the Steelers, because we kind of found out from a national media, we were all propping up Tomlin, but we got a ton of tweets from people in Pittsburgh being like, no, we're kind of tired. No, we're tired of him. And I'd be curious to see what people in Michigan State and East Lansing are saying about Izzo, because, you know, 2000, that was his fifth year in Michigan State. How do Spartan fans feel about Izzo? Do they love him, or are they kind of tired of him too?
Well, if they're tired of him, then
I understand
what you're saying, but I'm now responding.
Yeah.
Like, Tom Izzo is one of the greatest coaches ever. And he's one of the best people in college sports. The world is a better place for him being a coach there. If you're tired of him, that's really says a lot more about you than it says about him. Having said that, what was the last time you said Calipari was in the Final Four?
2015.
Okay, so Izzo has been in the Final Four since then, a total of one time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, and yet we have one standard for one and another standard for the other. Greeny brought to you by ESPN Bet, the official sports book of ESPN. What a plug. Trivia, go.
Some draft prep here. Who led college football? Who led the FBS in touchdown passes across the last two seasons, 2022 plus 2023? Who threw the most touchdowns across those two seasons?
Oh, that's a good question, because the answer is not as obvious as you'd think it is, and you'll hear it next on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greeny, the podcast. Greeny with Mike Greenberg.
Hembo, where'd you go to college?
I went to LaSalle University.
What did you major in?
Communication.
Hembo went to LaSalle?
I went to two colleges. I have a master's degree in education. But yeah. I didn't feel like it was worth mentioning because I'm not working in education.
But didn't you go to 4 years to the other school?
I attended 4 years at Cedarville University.
And how long did you go to LaSalle?
For 2 years.
So when someone says, where did you go to college, usually you answer with where you went to college.
At Cedarville, I majored in communication. At LaSalle, I got a master's in education.
You said the major from your undergrad, but you said where you went to grad school.
You got that wrong in so many ways, like the simplest question.
This is Greeny.
He's really a complicated man, and there's no other way to describe it. Anyway, he's with us here on ESPN Radio, and we're, I guess, the better for it. He's got trivia ready for us. Let's do that.
Yeah, a little draft prep. Who led college football? Who led the FBS in touchdown passes across the last two seasons? So that's 2022 plus 2023.
I'm almost positive I know this just based on my actual draft prep. So I will go last, unless it's just someone who's not on the radar. But if it's among the people who are on the radar, I think I know the answer to this question. So Pineapple Jack, you're sitting right here. Who you got?
I don't know why I feel like I remember reading this somewhere, and it would be the perfect amount of sneaky. I'm going to say Sam Hartman.
Sam Hartman, Notre Dame last year. Bubba?
I didn't even think of Sam Hartman. That's a good one. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I know this one. I have no idea. I'm going to go with Michael Penix Jr.
Okay, that's who I think it is, too. I think it's Penix Jr., who had two monster years at Washington and played more games than most people because they went all the way to the championship game last year. Cam?
The year before concerns me, but I just know he had a ridiculous season this past year, so I'm going with Bo Nix.
Bo Nix was the other one that I thought of. Those are the two I thought of. I didn't think of Sam Hartman. I'm going to go with Penix, but Hartman's not a bad guess. And Hembo, the answer is?
The answer is Bo Nix.
Yes!
Okay.
Bo Nix, 74 touchdown passes
across
the last two seasons.
Oh, man. I should have gotten that one right. Don't miss me hosting the NFL Draft on ESPN. April 25th. Speaking of which, let's do a little draft prep.
So you ready for the draft? Let's get started.
Greeny's Draft Prep.
God bless Matt Miller. He tweets at NFL Draft Scout, and he's really good. And he has released a mock draft today that has not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, but 7 rounds. He has projected the entire 7-round draft, which for someone like me is a dream scenario, because all I'm doing is looking for the names of players who are likely to go in round 3. I would be willing to bet you every cent I have that of the 86 players I have already scouted and done notes on, that I have got the entire first round and probably the entire second round. It's the third round where things go sideways on me. And as I've always told you, if you were watching the draft late on Friday night and we're in that third round and the commissioner says a name and all you hear me say is, Mel? Then you know I didn't do that guy. So I try to have everybody. I mean, with the compensatory picks, in my three seasons doing this, I think the first year, I think there were like two guys I hadn't done. The second year was weird. There were like 8 guys I hadn't done. And then last year, I think there were only 2 or 3. So hopefully I'll have them all in play. Anyway, Let me just run through what he's got for you here, because he is projecting four quarterbacks going off the board immediately. He's projecting Caleb Williams 1, Jaden Daniels 2. He's then projecting Minnesota to trade up with the Patriots to take Drake May. And then he's projecting Denver to trade up with Arizona and take J.J. McCarthy. So he has those quarterbacks going boom, 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 1, 2, 3, 4, two trades. And in this order, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy. You're wondering, where's the next quarterback? He has Bo Nix going 13 to the Raiders. And that's it for round one. He has just those five, not Penix, in round one. He has the Giants taking Penix midway through round two with pick number 47. So that's the quarterbacks. Let's stop there. Anyone have any questions, thoughts, et cetera?
I have both questions and thoughts. Cam, you put in the Google Doc a fascinating odds change. Would you mind sharing that as it relates to J.J. McCarthy, who Matt Miller has going 4 overall? Is there a chance, based on the odds, that he goes even higher than 4?
Yeah, it's getting ridiculous. Like, he is skyrocketing like crazy. So these are his odds to go number 2, where everyone thinks Jaden Daniels is going to go. Opened at 50-1. Yesterday it was 10-1. It's now 3-1 that he goes number 2 overall. The Vikings are still the most likely to draft him at minus 140. You would assume that would be in a trade-up, and then it's the Giants, the Broncos, the Commanders, and the Patriots. So McCarthy's not just skyrocketing. He's potentially jumping a lot of people. A lot of smoke and mirrors this time of year, but his odds are now 3-1 to go number 2.
If only someone had come in here on Monday and said that the biggest note that anyone should have from this draft is that J.J. McCarthy's stock is skyrocketing, and that, in fact, when it's all said and done, he's going to go ahead of Drake May. Who said that? I could have sworn someone said that Monday.
Someone smart.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Right. It was me. I've been telling you that all along. This is the guy teams are falling in love with. I thought Drake May was the guy people were going to fall in love with because he's big, strong, and athletic. It turns out J.J. McCarthy is the guy people are falling in love with.
So it is very likely, if not certain, that Caleb Williams goes 1-1. I'm willing to accept that, even though I did not necessarily think that would be the case when the process started. The second overall pick, though, I genuinely view as a three-horse race. There are three quarterbacks now with 3-1 odds or shorter to be the number 2 pick. I mean, Jaden Daniels is the favorite at minus 125, but the gap between Daniels and McCarthy has shrunk a lot in the last 3 days, and basically nothing has happened in the last 3 days, except Jim Harbaugh said a bunch of favorable things about J.J. McCarthy's pro day.
Let me take you through the rest of what he has in the top 10, just if you're interested. It then becomes a festival of wide receivers and offensive linemen. He's got Marvin Harrison Jr. going 5 to the Chargers, which means he would fall into the lap of Jim Harbaugh there. Malik Nabers, who's the other spectacular receiver in this draft from LSU, he has going 6 to the Giants. Joe Alt, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame, he has going 7 to Tennessee. The first defender off the board is Dallas Turner, pass rusher out of Alabama, going 8 to Atlanta. He then has Roma Dunze falling all the way to the Bears at 9, which would be an unbelievably good outcome for them. And then he has the Jets taking Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia, at 10. I think he's a really good player. I really don't want that to happen. If this goes the way, if the first 9 picks go the way he has them projected, and both Olu Fashanu and Talisi Fuaga, the two tackles, are still on the board, I would rather the Jets take one of them than the tight end, or trade back and let someone take the tight end and take Troy Fatanu, who is a tackle from Washington who's going to be a guard in the NFL, or just stock up on offensive linemen. The Jets season will not depend on how good their tight end play is this year. It will 100% depend on their offensive line. So that's what I'm hoping they'll do. Anyway, much more draft prep as we work our way towards it. Hembo's got to get a stopwatch handy for opening day tomorrow. I got to check in with Mad Dog, and we'll see you back in Better Than Ever on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the Podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN, and also available wherever you get your podcasts.